Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is the In This League Fantasy Podcast Network. In This League Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Online at inthisleague.com. Now, here's your hosts, Bogman and the Welsh.
Welcome in, friendos, to the In This League Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Today on the episode, Bogman and myself are breaking down an NFBC draft and hold. That is what we are doing today. Not a best ball. We kept calling it a best ball. It's kind of a version of it, if you will. But let's get it right, because I realized it after the fact.
Draft and hold. No pickups.
Draft and hold. No pickups. 50 rounds, except we do set the lineup once a week, which is different than a best ball. So there is a difference in there. And that's what we're doing today. We're going to be breaking down all the latest news, because the winter meetings unleashed. Woo! The levees broke on
no more agency. Complaints from me. It's all happening, Welsh. It's all happening.
Hey, man,
I'm like
I
Jay Baruchel from Almost Famous.
I told you, man. I thought the winter meetings were going to. I'm not sure if I thought it was going to be this expansive, but it was. We've had a majority of the major signings we're going to break down. And then, like I said, we have 10 rounds through of our NFBC hold draft and hold, and we will talk through that, talk about the picks. It's not in a points format, so it's more of a roto format. So this helps. It's definitely a strategy. All these players and stuff like that would be easily implementable to best balls that you're doing and wherever you end up doing those, friends. And also, let's tell you about the other fun stuff. Yes, I'm going to tell you about InThisLeague.com, which is our Patreon, which we would love for you to sign up. We would love for you to blow it out at the end of the year. We'd love for you to come in hard on the 2023 season, make it better than it's ever been before, prop ITL so we can get you more content, so we can get you more shows in season. And Patreon is where you do it. You can get in the GroupMe rooms, hang with us. This is how we filled the draft and hold. We do best balls and all of our mock drafts that are going to be coming up in mock draft season, all through the Patreon. So if you want everything, do it there. But today, the official release of the early redraft ranks, which are not so early anymore, full through. I've got my overall for you. I've got positional with tiers, and that is version one dropped today on our Patreon. And you can check that out if you are part of the Patreon. And that's only at the sergeant level as well. Within the next 24 hours, you're going to have the prospect top 500. And maybe when you're listening to this, it'll be up. And the dynasty list, all of the newest versions, the December versions, the final version. Well, I say the final version, mostly the final version for this year, because the other thing I'm doing is a prospect ADP draft that is going on now. And what that is I will be creating an ADP for prospects if you guys want it for dynasty. And that will be probably available by next week or so, with a full breakdown in January. So I'm just telling you, there's so much cool stuff at ITL. If you like us and you like our stuff that we do, it's available over on Patreon, and you guys can know that you are supporting us. And Boggs, also 1 week away.
1 week.
Deck Our Balls Christmas special.
I am just glad that I will be fully recovered from my cold and up and off of the injured list and ready to rock and roll for Deck Our Balls, because I got to get my body ready for that thing.
You do.
It's always a wild time.
Deck my body. You got to get that ready. And we got to get the planning. I've got a couple ideas that we're going to go through. We had some of our guys in the Deck Our Balls room drop some potential things. But, you know, if anything, it's a fun time to hang with everybody. And that's what we'll be doing. The Deck Our Balls Christmas special next Friday, the 16th. You know, we didn't set a time, but it'll probably be like 7 p.m. Eastern. That's usually like a relatively decent time that we would do it, somewhere around there. We'll post about it and I'll have some artwork up. But we'll be doing that. It is a Patreon exclusive only. You won't be able to access it anywhere unless you're part of the Patreon, most likely at the LT level. So make sure that you guys come and I don't know if we'll open up for the Sergeant. I don't know what we've done in previous years, but either way, make sure that you are locked in and come have fun with us. Celebrate a little bit of holiday and just some ridiculousness. That's the best way to put it with Bogman and I don't know. Maybe someone will cry. Maybe someone will throw up. Yeah. I mean, anything's possible. Literally everything has happened. We had some not safe for work video. What was it? The cameo that was sent to me last year. Jesus came one time. Literally, Jesus popped up one time, which is really cool. So anything is possible. Jesus, boobs, crying, alcohol. It's all on the table over at inthisleague.com. That's the setup. What a setup. All right. Let's talk about the stuff and things. Let's talk about free agency. And let's talk about Aaron Judge to start. Aaron Judge actually bucks the trend of everybody leaving is returning to the New York Yankees. I will tell you, this is probably not that you can even like scorecard this type of stuff. I've had a couple that I've been right about. This is one that I was definitely wrong. I felt pretty confident that he was not going to return to New York. I felt like there was some bad blood that was going on, some Taylor Swift. And there was more money we found out on the table in other places. I believe the Padres, the rumor was it was the Padres or Dodgers that were eclipsing $400 million. And the Giants, I think, were in a similar range. But what it came down to apparently was they called him. Steinbrenner called him and was just like, you know, hey, you want to be here? And he's like, yeah, I want to be a Yankee. And like, what do you need? And he's like, I need that ninth year. And they're like, all right. And it got done. And that was it. Just nine. Apparently the ninth year was the most important thing. And he's returning to the Yankees. And, you know, I talked about this on CBS last night or two nights ago, as you guys are listening to this. We did a whole free agency breakdown. So some of this might be retread. But I said, Boggs, like him returning to New York was enough for me to pop him back up over Julio Rodriguez and give real consideration to him being near the top. You know, I don't have him at number one, but I moved him up because I just think hitting in New York is what he knows. It's a great spot. We saw what the ceiling was of him hitting in New York, and he stole bases. He's a top five category player. Like, for me, for him to return without those other questions, I think it just makes him even make more sense to be near the top of draft. So I moved him up. His NFBC ADP is 5, which I have him higher.
You're absolutely right about putting him back up there. It's funny. I was watching MLB Network and they were talking about, I believe it was not Tom Pelissero. I can't remember his name. I'm getting all these reporters mixed up because it's football and baseball season right now. Tom Pelissero is a football guy.
Heyman?
No, it wasn't Heyman. I mean, they were crushing Heyman.
Dude, he was getting destroyed. He was getting
killed.
Well, I mean,
he announced the Giants.
He pulled the Bob Nightingale. He was pulling a Nightingale on the thing. He was just bad reporting. And I think, what was it? Angus Judge or whatever it was. Amphis. I mean, he was just mistyping. He was just a disaster.
Yeah, I can't remember. It's the, God, I cannot remember the guy's name. I see his face. Anyway.
Passon?
No.
Morrissey?
No, I'll, it's not Rosenthal.
You know.
It was not Eno. I'll come up with it. Just give me a minute.
Mick
but he
Pollock.
Was talking about like players over 270 pounds because, you know, he's over 270 pounds. It was a weird stat. He said there's been one player that weighs over 270 pounds because, it's, you know, baseball's not a big man's game. That's football. Over the age of 37 that has hit a home run in the bigs. And that was Bartolo Colon.
Oh, I was about to say, let me guess, but I never would have guessed it.
The only player over 270 plus after the age of 37 that has hit a homer in the bigs at any point was Bartolo Colon.
I mean, as everyone knows, though, 270 on a 6'8" body just looks different.
It's different than 270.
My weight, if you squished my weight down, not 6'4", down to, you know, like 5'10", it would be a lot rougher. Not that it's not already rough.
Yeah,
you'd
look like Alejandro Kirk. Yeah, I know.
It'd be a rough look. Yeah. So, all right. I mean, the way that is interesting, but
it's just an interesting, just a thing with this
anecdotal. Yeah, it's an anecdotal thing to him.
It's 9 years. He's 30 right now. I think, does he turn 31 before the season starts?
I think it's going to be like, I think it's like 40. I thought there were some opt-outs in there, but
there probably is. But yeah, he was born in 92, so he'll be 31 right after the season starts. So this contract's going to take until he's 39, 40. So, you know, that the back end of that, he's going to be getting paid a lot of money. And this is a guy that's already had health issues staying on the field anyway. Last 2 years has been great. 155 last year, 148, I believe, year before. You know, the COVID year, he only played half, less than half, 28, 102, 112. So he's missed some games in the past. This is a dice roll for the Yankees, but AL MVP, you know, this is the risk you take when you're in the Yankees. You don't sign him before last year, and then he goes and wins an MVP, and now he needs all of the money, and your fan base is going to be pissed if you don't get him. So
yeah,
here we are, back to the Yankees a boatload.
It is interesting. I think Steamer might have re-ran their projections, because I remember the early projections. We did that hitter projection episode. It was 42 homers, if you remember correctly, Box. I think it was. It now shows 44 homers, and I believe the home run and RBI totals are a little bit higher than what we saw on this pitch. So I want to say they re-ran them, and they're a little bit more in favor. But still, it's like, you know, my biggest argument, like,
ballpark versus, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Well, now you have exact ballpark factors that you can put in. I don't know, man. It's one of those things where it's like, you have to build regression into who he was, but are you willing to say he's going to hit half the homers? And if you follow what the projections are doing, this is Steamer's projections: 44 homers, 111 runs, 106 RBI, 10 stolen bases, and a 276 batting average. That's number one overall player type of. I know he doesn't have the insane stolen bases, and Acuna's projection is really high, but I think there's a floor there. Elite power might not be the exact premium that elite stolen bases are, but the 30 plus homer guys compared to the 20 plus stolen base guys are close to one for one. I mean,
got better in the second half, dude. Like, yeah, you know, he was having a good first half, but 349 in the second half with 29 homers, 21 fewer games. He hit four fewer homers. I mean, the guy got better as the year went on too. So he might just be hitting his absolute peak right now, which is crazy to think of.
Yeah, it's a great return, if anything. The second big move, we're going through all the big moves here. Trey Turner is out with the Dodgers, which is good. He's going to Philly, and he has an NFBC draft capital of number one, the number one player. Trey Turner is going to go there. Now, what I've been curious about was the exact role that they're going to slot him into. And Roster Resource currently puts him at one. And this is why I throw this out here. I do think there is the potential to not crazy lower him, but if you take him out of a two or three slot, that's going to take away those RBI. And I think he had 100 RBI this past season, which was a complete anomaly. I'm pulling this up here because I just didn't have it. A complete anomaly to his career. He had 100 RBI. He had never had over 77 in a single season. And he had under 60 for four seasons. So hitting in that three spot, which I think was one of the more primary spots, plus two, between two and three, way beat out the leadoff spot. That's important to some of his value. And Roster Resource could be wrong. I kind of tend to think what they could do, and they might do, I think would make more sense, is with Bryce Harper out, hit Turner three, Schwarber goes back to leading off, and hit Realmuto two. I'd love to see that. And I think that would make me feel really confident. At the end of the day, though, it's probably just not going to be a thing where he's going to stick. And when Bryce Harper comes back, he might move to the leadoff spot. If Schwarber regresses, and batting average is always an issue, and an OBP, maybe they put him at the leadoff spot. I'm just saying, I think it's something to consider with Turner. This is a pretty solid space that he's going into, but I do think there is the potential that it's a slight downtick, especially if he's leading off. Maybe the stolen base numbers go up. Maybe they'd be aggressive. That's something to consider as well. But I think the RBI numbers have the potential to dip a decent amount. And the projections on him, Boggs, have him only hitting 75 RBI this year, with his stolen base and homers going down, according to Steamer.
I mean, how many bases did Philly steal last year? Where were they among? They were fifth.
Great question.
In the league.
Were they fifth in the league?
Yeah, I mean, Texas, Miami, Cleveland, Chicago, Philly. They had 105. They're one of eight teams over 100.
Where were the Dodgers?
They were ninth, so they were still good.
But that's with Trey Turner.
Yeah, that's
Trey Turner had 27 of them.
Right, and just looking at what he did last year in terms of the batting order, 23 times he hit leadoff, or 98 at bats he had a leadoff, 23 games, 78 at second, and 59 at third. So
yeah, that was my point. He played the majority of his year
all over
in a relative RBI spot, and the Dodgers would throw out Mookie Betts as a leadoff guy. So, you know, that hits a little bit different. That hits a little bit harder. So
Mookie's gonna play second this year, by the way. Do you see that?
Well, no, there's talk
more
about
second.
It. There's talk about it. Yeah, Dave Roberts said that he really likes to play second, and they're looking at that. If that's the case, that's going to be a game changer, I think, to his value.
Sure.
If he is going to play second, I think we need a little. Like, it's cool that they talked about that, but I think we need like a little bit more. If they're going to anoint him the starting second baseman, it's a whole nother ball game. If he's going to be the starting second baseman, that's a whole nother ball game to his value, because second base. I was writing about it in the Fantasy Black Book, which is going to be coming out, I think, in a few weeks. I did the infield profiles, and second base stinks. You know, it's got some top end guys. I think there's some value, but you want to talk about the overall depth. It's not good. And the first second base guy is not someone you look at for the first three or four rounds. And there's a question mark on it. You know, do you want Simeon? Do you want Altuve? Do you want Albies? I really like Jazz. But they're not top two, maybe three round players, maybe three if you want to go Simeon. Mookie Betts is a first round pick. And as a second baseman, I think you lot him up a tiny bit more. That would be huge. But I do need them to be like, hey, this is his role. And if that's his role, I want to point out, by the way, if he were given the second base gig, that also, to me, throws Miguel Vargas back out in the outfield, unless they make a big major move. Because they've said that they want to have some young, controllable assets that don't have a lot of cash on their side. And Miguel Vargas is someone that would then, I think, move into the outfield, and then shazam, I would be all in. But can they afford to move Bellinger and Betts off of defensively in the outfield in 1 year?
I mean, if there's a team that can make up the runs, it's the Dodgers.
The hell would their outfield even be right now? I don't even know. Let me take a look at what it currently has. The current outfield is Mookie and Wright, Trace Thompson in center, and James Outman in left. So I just want to point out, they have Miguel Vargas starting at third. You take Mookie Betts off that outfield, it's Trace Thompson, James Outman, and Miguel Vargas is your outfield.
Well, that's better field. You know, yeah, because they ain't hitting. So
yeah, Chris Taylor is aligned as their second base. So I think at the end of the day, it's probably something that he will just acquire, but it might take you a month,
50% of the year. Yeah,
maybe. Yeah, it might take you 2 months to get there, or longer. We'll really have to see
if
where
it's
it goes.
20 games. Yeah. I mean, if you're on Yahoo, he probably already has it. But
he aligned over. Well, you know, the shift is going to take away Yahoo's silly little like a guy shifted over. And remember when Anthony Rizzo
getting second base,
that nonsense of a year where Rizzo had aligned near second base due to shifts enough that they gave him second base eligibility. And we're like, come on, dude.
Well, look, here's the thing that I didn't hate about that is they at least made the distinction of the guy changed his glove when he shifted to a second baseman's glove. Like, at least we're taking some consideration, not just, hey, he stood near second, he's second, you know. But I mean, their five game stuff is so ridiculous comparative to every other site. Every other site is different, but they refuse to change. Can't make Ohtani one player, all the stuff. So
yeah.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey, guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And so, not to make a big thing about Trey Turner, but I'm just pointing that out that, like, I've had him as, like, my number one or 1-2, you know, him and Acuna and Ramirez are all kind of sitting in there. And I think Judge belongs in that same tier of everything.
And Julio. I think
Julio. Well, yeah. Yeah. No,
It's nice at the front, man.
The top
that
five
first
is
five
nice.
Picks is out. They're outstanding. It's a good spot to be in.
I just don't know if Turner needs to be a consensus number one. The stolen base marker is really interesting because if that goes up, if I told you, hey, you're going to sacrifice a quarter of your RBI, but you are going to add 10 more stolen bases, you know, what would you
take it?
You probably will take it.
Stolen bases for sure.
So if you're going to get over 30, you know, if you get to 35 stolen bases on that team, which there's an argument to be said, maybe you want to manufacture a tiny bit more with Harper out.
Yeah, I was going to say that's the lineup with Harper out too.
Yeah.
Because Harper will come back at some point.
Yeah. And maybe we just kind of re-talked myself through that. It's like the sacrifice is the juice is worth the squeeze no matter what. Because then if Harper comes back and, let's say he's hitting third before Harper comes back, RBI's up, and then he goes down to lead off when Harper's back, all works out. If he leads off the whole season, probably going to be more aggressive, all works out. So not that bad. On the pitcher side, we had the two biggest pitchers on the market change teams. Jacob DeGrom went to the Texas Rangers, and Justin Verlander went to his old team, going to the New York Mets. DeGrom currently has an ADP inside the top 35. Verlander's got an ADP right at 50 in NFBC. I'm curious at your take on both of these. I feel like you're going to be pretty indifferent about him. DeGrom is going to be injury, and Verlander.
No,
I
think DeGrom is going too low. To be honest with you, like this is what I said leading, like going into last year, I didn't want to mess with DeGrom because, you know, injury, like you said, I was afraid of the injury, but he came back at the end of the year. He performed well. He's still the best pitcher in baseball. It's not a question. And he made it through. So I know we're all scared about his arm, and that is why he's going in round three, even in, you know, a 15 man, because we are afraid of the arm's going to fall off and all that stuff. Injury, right, Welsh? But he made it through a big chunk of last year. Now, didn't come back as soon as we wanted, right? Which is another reason I didn't want him going into the year, is because one setback and boom, he's done for the year. He came back at the end. He pitched admirably. He looked good. He's going to a new situation. So I'm going to be back in on DeGrom here. So Verlander, you're right. I am fairly lateral on that move. Like, he's still on a good team. He's probably in a better ballpark. Maybe he's a little better than last year.
Relatively lateral. I kind of think Verlander's been going low. Like, I'm not going to even make the argument with DeGrom because I just, guess what? And not, this is not you. This is like rhetorical to everybody.
Sure.
I like DeGrom more than you. Whoever's listening, I like DeGrom more than you guys because he's the best pitcher in baseball. Yes, he's injury prone, has to be factored, blah, 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 blah. I like DeGrom more than you. Verlander, I kind of look at, and you and I were kind of doing this as well. We'll talk about it in just a tiny bit, but like Verlander, Scherzer, they're just kind of like undervalued right now. And I know they're getting older, and every year they're just continuously getting older. That's how it works. You know, keep playing fantasy baseball, but they keep getting older, these pitchers. But I still like, they're still performing at high levels. And Verlander, Scherzer playing together is interesting. I don't know how much more I'm probably a little bit higher on Verlander. Actually, let me take a look at my overall where I've got the Verlander, and I can tell you exactly how much higher or lower I am. Ooh, I can't find him. I'm quite a bit higher. I mean, I'm quite a bit higher. I'm at least around higher than they're labeling him. And in my overall, I actually have them pretty close. I don't have as much of a gap as they have. And I'm also higher underground.
Right.
Than NFBC. So both of those, I have them higher. Pretty good moves. I know you're going to like this one. This has been your guy for years. Kenley Jansen signs a 2-year deal with the Boston Red Sox. And this is a favor to all of us because A, he goes into a situation where he is a no-doubt closer until he stinks, unless he pulls a Kimbrel to the Cubs.
Well, it's not just stinking. And because this is, you do have to worry about Kenley a little bit because he's had bumps. I mean, bumps. Last three seasons, and the heart condition.
Here's where things can work a little bit in his favor. They're stretching out Garrett Whitlock and Tanner Houck to start. And if they both start, those are two guys that are away from the bullpen, but Matt Barnes is still there. But bottom line, he goes into a situation where he is the closer. Yay. The other positive is that just gives you a little bit more breathing room about Raisel Iglesias, that they didn't bring him back and screw him over, because you and I are big Raisel Iglesias guys again this year. And Kenley goes in, though, with the Red Sox. Here's a problem. That division keeps getting better and they don't. You know, they just lost Xander, we're going to talk about. Ooh. Yeah, there's questions about if they can't make the moves, you're not going to be able to get Devers to agree to resign. And they might really have to consider in season, if this is a disaster, we might need to pull a Cubs and we might need to unload this thing, because the best thing they've done was a signing we'll talk about here. Well, we could just talk about it right now. Masataka Yoshida, who signed a 5-year, $90 million is what they had to invest in him. And he's interesting. I was actually watching some video on it before I went on CBS.
Small, right?
Yeah, like he's small, 5'8". He actually reminds me, there's a lot of, and you know, I'm not trying to be one for one, but there's a lot of Ha-Sung Kim in there. Okay. He's better bat speed. He actually kind of has a Franco bat speed to him, where like you'll see some pitches where the bat speed is so intense, even high fastballs, he can just get on top of and launch and, you know, hit doubles. I just really don't know if the power is going to translate. He had KBO was obviously like a double A version of the of Japan's baseball league, but you know, Ha-Sung Kim had
a good
like,
ballpark for him. You know, it's short down the right field. So,
Like, I think like Ha-Sung Kim had bigger power numbers in that lower level. He was like a 20 homer guy. Yoshida was. He doesn't run.
Probably 10.
I think he's like a 15-ish homer 10, guy 15. In Boston. He'll hit for probably a decent contact, but the other thing he's going to do is he's just not going to strike out. So like your worst case scenario is like, is this like Luis Arraez type of player? Best case scenario, I said maybe he's going to be like a Jeff McNeil type of player, but I'm not that excited about him. But that's the player that
he's
signed.
Going low in NFBC. What
he's
is
currently he's currently the leadoff hitter. He's currently listed
that's
on
what
Ross Resource as the leadoff.
Ross Resource has on him.
So he's interesting, but you know, like many of these players, it's like the first 2 months is the best, and then there's a regression period. I think there'll be a regression period here. He has great plate discipline. But that play discipline could lead to a higher OBP and a little bit struggling batting average. We'll have to see. But that's the move. That's all they've done. That's all they've done because they lost.
By the way, Tom Verducci was the guy I was thinking of. Sorry.
You finally got it?
Yeah. It just popped in my brain. So
wouldn't have been on the top 15. You're talking about important reporters and then you drop Tom Verducci. Nope.
It works for MLB Network. It was. Yeah, that's why I said Tom Pelissero. I knew it was Tom. I just.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So
yeah. Everybody bated breath is like, thank you, God. Bogman got it. Yeah. Tom Verducci. That's it. But Xander Bogaerts is the big blow to the Red Sox. This happened late last night, literally after we like 10 minutes after we recorded CBS. Signs a 11-year deal. Okay. 11-year deal for $280 million it was. And it's fascinating on a million different levels because I believe Machado has an opt-out after this, because this is what you have to consider. Who are they going to pay, Machado or Soto? Because they're not going to pay both. If Machado opts out, can they pay Soto in favor of, or does he keep going and then they lose Soto? Either way, what this tells us, I was kind of down on Xander. A lot of Xander's peripherals are not fantastic in Boston. I don't know if it's much better going to be in San Diego. You're going to go into a killer lineup. I think he's going to be a little bit overrated by the move, if we're being honest here, but he's going to go into a spot to play shortstop, which is very telling about Fernando Tatis Jr. Here's a worry I have. Does Tatis lose shortstop eligibility in 2024? Because Xander looks to be the shortstop all year long, and Machado is your third baseman. I don't know how much defense you're going to get on Tatis. He might lose that. And then coming into the next season, if Machado does opt out and leave, does Bogaerts go to third and Tatis is your shortstop again? I don't know. It's going to be washy. Either way, it's a super team that they put together. It's a fantastic lineup that I think they have him hitting .300. I mean, he's a great contact hitter. He just doesn't steal. His home run total, he's hitting .400. And his home run totals have kind of gone the way of the dodo, and the hard hit numbers kind of dropped a bit. So I'm not going to have him aggressive, but I did move him up a little notch because, like, Jesus, dude, you're going to be hitting behind Tatis and Machado and Soto,
it's a good spot to be in, man. Yeah. Right now they have it because obviously Tatis suspended to start the year. Kim, Soto, Machado, Bogarts, and Cronenworth behind him. So
it's crazy.
Have fun in the lineup. I mean, and whatever, just get Kim out of there and put in Tatis. Tatis, Soto, Machado, Bogarts. Oof. That is it's a good spot to be in, man. But like you said, 11-year contract means they're gonna be paying him until he's 41 years old. So
which it's like it's bunker level stuff. But yeah, like I said, I wrote
$1.5 billion been spent on free agency to this point in the offseason right now. So
that's nuts. That's
a lot of money, dude.
Yeah, I mean, I have a big write-up on him on a lot of different stuff that you're going to be able to find out. But he had like a big dip. His home run to fly ball ratio dropped 4 points down to like 10.6 from the year over. He's had a 3-year dip in ISO, which ended at 149 this past year. His expected home run total was only 13 this past year. Oof. And it's worrisome. And you know who? Oh, this is an interesting thing, not to give it all away, but I wrote this in the Black Book. He kind of has a Ketel Marte-ness to him where he doesn't live up to the big, like he had almost 114 mile an hour max EV, but he had an average EV, I think, that was under 90. And that's very Ketel Marte, where you can get in on a few hits, but your overall approach is not consistently strong. You can hit for good contact.
Well, at least with Ketel, it's like Ketel is hitting from both sides of the plate. You know what I mean? Like, so one side he's going to have more power, one side he isn't. So that is like, okay, you can kind of see where the difference between max and average is. Not Xander. Xander, that's just weird. That's just a strange correlation there.
Yeah. One good thing, though, he had the best WOBA among all shortstops at 363. So you go and put him in a prime spot where you're hitting in front of Soto and Machado. All right. He might have 130 RBI this year, so I don't know. So I bump him up a little bit because of the offense that'll be in front of him, but you know, I'm not going to make him like some insane price. All right, we've got some smaller ones. You've got Wilson Contreras signed with the Cardinals. I think this is great. This is a solid move. He's a great. He's still a catcher though, but you're going to hit in the middle of an order, you know, that's going to be centered around probably right after Arenado and Machado. So yeah, I mean, that's a great RBI spot.
Whatever with the catcher, Cardinals are one of the best lineups to land exactly. in. So good spot.
The Giants missed out on Judge. They got Mitch Haniger. Mitch Haniger coming at a deal, NFBC ADP of 174. Big hard hit numbers. Average is a little bit in question. So this is just a good spot. But I don't know who the hell else is around there. You know, they don't have any other players. The rumored Carlos Baerga had the rumors of Correa. I wonder if Correa would even consider them now without Judge. He's linked to the Cubs, and the Twins are pushing hard. So there's only so many more players left on the market that the Giants can try to pick up.
Right now, he's a three-hole hitter. It's Estrada, Yastrzemski ahead of him, then Haniger.
I hate
then
that.
Then Jock Peterson and J.D. Davis.
Like, yeah, it's gross.
It's not great.
It's a sick, dumb lineup. A much better one, and this guy is an ADP after Mitch Haniger in NFBC, is Josh Bell. Signed a deal with the Cleveland, 2-year deal with the Guardians to be their DH/first baseman. He's going to kind of probably play between those. He had a lot of underlining, you know, fun stuff that's out there, though. He had a pretty intense decrease. I talked about this on CBS last night, so I'm retreading this, but he had like his hard hit percentage dropped from around the 50s to 40. I think it was 51% down to 40 this past year. He was atrocious with the Padres, of course. And he did have BABIP issues, which are going to change. So I think you put all of that together. I just don't think he's quite the underlying hard hit first baseman he was before, but he makes really good contact and he's on a team that kind of is built around that. So, manufacture runs too in front of him. Ramirez, Jimenez, if you have Rosario, any of that group, these are guys that are moving on the base path.
Roster Resource has Jimenez hitting behind him, which is strange. Juan Rosario, Jose, then Bell hitting cleanup, which makes sense.
Dude, by the way, I want to point out Jimenez, almost all those guys, Rosario was like 15 stolen bases or 17. Juan had over 20. Ramirez had over 20. I mean, manufacturing runs for Josh Bell all day long. RBIs are going to go up. He's a steal. I would rather have Josh Bell over Mitch Haniger without question, without thinking twice.
And Cleveland, like we said, third in stolen bases last year, 119. Miami and Texas, only two teams with more.
Smaller news. Cody Bellinger to the Cubs, 1 year prove it deal, $17 million. It's a contract year. I'll bite. It's like a sub 160 or 70 ADP. Did you have it on here? Yeah, you have it on here. 198. Yeah, so it's almost 200. I'll bite on the Cubs this year.
Should be hitting in the middle of that lineup too, right? I mean, they've got him hitting cleanup behind Ian Happ right now. I mean, it's rough.
Yeah, and until if they sign...
You have him platooning.
They're going to throw big dollars at one of those shortstops. I don't know if they're going to get Swanson or Correa at this point, but they're going to throw massive dollars to try. I think Correa is the guy that they really want to try to get, and you would still have him hitting behind them. They also signed Jameson Taillon, who I'm not really super interested in. I'm actually more interested in the other pitching move, Andrew Heaney going to Texas. Really, really love that one. Huge K numbers, under 3x FIP this past year. But, you know, it's a solid offense. He already did that. He already had that voodoo with the Dodgers.
That really rotation in Texas is starting to look kind of sexy, man.
Yeah, he redefined his slider at 30% of the time. He added 4 miles per hour on it. His velo went up with the Dodgers, but he became kind of a primary two-pitch pitcher. Him and DeGrom working together, I think that's a solid one-two.
Martin Perez was good for them last year. John Gray getting better. Jake Odorizzi, and they have Leiter coming up at some point. So starting to look pretty good in Texas.
Yeah, it's not too bad. They just got to keep their development going. You also had Jose Quintana sign with the Mets. That's a deal that I actually like. Taijuan Walker signed with Philly, both post 300 ADPs. Jose Quintana is going to be one that I'm going to absolutely buy in on. Very cheap in drafts. Taijuan Walker, we'll see.
We had out of those, you know, out of Pittsburgh, you know.
Exactly. I mean, the Cardinals, he was a drastic change. Yeah. From a 3.5 ERA with Pittsburgh down to a 2 ERA with the Cardinals.
So much better. Yeah.
Yeah. We had this whole discussion on wins, too, with Frank and them. You had the trade. Colton Wong was traded to the Mariners for Jesse Winker and Abraham Toro. I don't think we talked about that in the last one. Zach Eflin signed with the Rays. Aledmys Diaz signed with the A's, as well as Jace Peterson did.
It just means those guys will be getting work, you know.
I want to see here. Have you looked? I feel like Aledmys could start for them. And
anyone who's in Oakland that signs will start. Like,
well, I know they had
the beauty of signing with Oakland. Yeah,
they had
Jace Peterson is the starting third baseman.
Yeah,
they Aledmys have Aledmys Diaz. Starting at second base.
Yeah,
Jace platooning, but Aledmys starting. Second base.
Yeah, what they did was they moved, I think Tony Kemp got moved off to left field according to the roster resource, where they have Ramon Laureano, Tony Kemp, and Connor Capel as their outfielders, and Jason Aledmys going as starters. I mean, that team, they don't care about anything. They're just setting up for Vegas. But
yeah,
Aledmys actually might be a really sneaky, like
Murphy's deep, getting traded move. Somewhere. Yeah.
What's your
D-backs are interested in Murphy?
And who?
Did you see that? Sean Murphy.
They love catchers. That makes sense. I don't know if they want to give up the big price of what it's going to cost.
Or Christian
what is
Vasquez.
Your favorite fantasy move of all of these?
My favorite fantasy move of all of these is probably...
Say Judge.
Yeah, it's not Judge. Probably DeGrom to the Rangers. I like the ballpark. He's not going to get as many wins. I don't know. I don't know. It's probably Bogarts, just to be hyperbolic here. Hitting cleanup for San Diego is just such a good spot to be in. A lot of underlying crap that needs to be fixed, Welsh, but some of that stuff gets fixed with new instruction. Also, some of it gets fixed with effort. You know, just you're in a better place. You want to win. And
the rub-off. There's the rub-off of incredible talent.
Yeah. I mean,
just think of Machado, Tatis, Soto, and Xander Bogaerts, hopefully not sharing medicine tips, but talking about hitting, you know, and those guys switching off that. I would say Bogaerts is to be contrarian, because I would have said Bogaerts had you not, probably Josh Bell. Josh Bell being in a spot that, like I said, I think his game is starting to change as he gets a little bit older, but the way that the Guardians work in front of him, I think, really works well. I mean, Ramirez is such a great tool to have in front, but having these guys that are going to be aggressive on the base paths early, they can run, they also get on base, really creates some great opportunities, some RBI opportunities for Josh Bell, and puts pressure on pitching in front of Bell, that even with a guy like Andrés Méndez behind, I don't know if they want to let up. So I think that's a good one in Xander and Bell.
I want to be excited about Yoshida, but you know, like you said, he doesn't steal, even though he's hitting leadoff. Boston doesn't steal either. Just looking at what they did last year, 26 and stolen 52 stolen bases on the year. I mean,
well, he doesn't steal at all. So it's
he doesn't steal anyway, but the guys, the teams behind Boston were San Diego, Detroit, Colorado, Minnesota. Those are the only teams that were worse. So
yeah. And if anything, they just reestablished more like having Yoshida's. I mean, I think he was like 80 walks to 40 strikeouts. I mean, the guy just doesn't strike out. That was the difference. Like Kim in his last year in the KBO had a few more walks and strikeouts, but Yoshida's a 2-for-1 guy. So he's going to be super patient. He's going to make a lot of contact. And that's why it's lazy, but it's somewhere in that Luis Arraez, Jeff McNeil world. It's somewhere
lazy
in that
comparisons
world.
Is all we have right now because we haven't seen this guy play in the bigs. So, I mean,
well,
I
if anything, be lucky we have any type of comparison, but it's interesting. Go watch video on him. It's like it really can turn on baseballs and has a good eye, but I just don't know if it's going to travel the way we all think it's going to travel. I think he's gonna be a big doubles hitter. But leading off is always interesting, especially if Devers is behind you. All right. Lots of news. That is a ton of news that is out there. There's more to come. Obviously, we've still got free agents out there. Carlos Correa, Dansby Swanson, probably the biggest two. I'm trying to think of who else we're forgetting that's out of the market. I feel like there's probably an outfielder or two that I'm not thinking of, but those are the biggest guys. Also,
and
trades.
Still more trades to come.
Yeah, the winter meetings. Trades. That's the one thing the winter meetings did not do that they always do is that is the crazy trade time. It became the crazy free agent time, but I think the winter meetings set the stage for trades. The Diamondbacks had a whole lot of talk about how they were working through talking trades, wanted to make some stuff happen. I think this coming week, now that it's moving past, is going to be trade time because the free agents are coming off the market. Teams know they have to be more aggressive. And we're probably over the next week or two going to see some bigger trade moves happen involving prospects and bigger teams and maybe lower market teams like the Diamondbacks who say they want to get involved. It'll probably be more involved in a trade market of trading a few assets. So, of course, we will talk about that as it goes. Let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about our draft and hold NFBC. We're going to give you 10 rounds. We'll talk you through the whole business, and we will do it right after this.
In this league.
Somebody royally forked up. Somebody forked up. Why can't I say fork?
If you're trying to curse, you can't hear.
It's full shirt.
Holy mother forking shirt balls.
I had somebody ask on our Patreon wall. We have this community board. If you're not a part of, you only do like the sergeant level, totally cool. But you don't have access to group me rooms where you have direct access to you and I. But somebody dropped a question and it was really simple. It was just like, I've never played NFBC before. Where should I start? And I was like, well, I'd say the best place on NFBC specifically to start is you want to start with like a DC 50. Like that's what we're doing. We're just doing. Yeah. You know, it's a $50 draft and hold, but you know, not that all the other places do draft and holds, but you know, if you are new to the space beyond just redraft leagues and stuff like that, maybe you even start with a best ball. And we talked about it, I think last week, $10 best balls out on Fantrax. And we'll actually be telling you next month about a new partner we're going to be having that has some even better opportunities. So save up signing for any places, save it for us, friends. And we'll tell you all about it, but that would probably be like a great first spot. But if you want to jump into NFBC, which it's fun, it's a great place to do it. If you've ever done even TGFBI draft and holds, that's what this is. And the concept is you draft like 50 rounds. You have this enormous roster. And on Mondays, you set it. And I think in these, they might also give you the Friday adjustment. Sometimes they do, but you set it once a week, essentially like a weekly league. And how you set it up, but you've got these just massive rosters, but you can't make any moves in the offseason. So, you know, the roster management is a lot less because it's just starting your roster. So go and that's, I think, the lowest you can do on NFBC if they allow you to play is like a $50
I think
one.
The
which
true
this is.
Best balls right now are like 150 at a minimum. So,
yeah. But also if you're new, because the format is different, the format is more aggressive.
Way more risk taking.
I tepidly talk about the ADP in not, I don't like it to be the be all end all. That's also why we do draft analysis show. And we talk about, you know, it's better in season when you get a little bit closer to draft season, when you can look at like ECRs and stuff like that, because the strategy is different. It's two catcher stuff. So you're going to have catchers that bump up It's hyper aggression. Stolen bases are up. Scott White and I were kind of talking about this, where he was surprised Aaron Judge wasn't like the number one guy. And it was like, well, you know, in an ADP standpoint on NFBC, he's five because people need stolen bases. Stolen bases go out in style. So stolen bases go higher because you have such big rosters. People are reaching for young guys. You're reaching for players that that might not even have a chance, but if people want to take the Jordan Lawlers, they might put out there. Jordan Walker is pushing up. So there's just a lot more risk taking in these type of formats paying near the top, that it's close to what you're used to, but you're going to have to like go with the trends. Closers are going to go like eight crap here. It's going to go nuts in how they go. And you have to be used to the hyper aggression.
Especially in draft and hold for the closers, because like you don't get to go and pick up a guy becomes a closer. You have to have already had him on your roster. So closers definitely go extra high, as do catchers and, you know, just players with starting spots. But like you said, there is a lot of Christina Ricci going on here. A lot of reaching. A lot of reaching.
She's like a number one for me and back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, it's a tough one. Here's a tough debate. Ooh. Christina Ricci or Jennifer Love Hewitt? Not now. Because
not for me. That's easy. Christina Ricci.
Okay, because Christina Ricci blows that out of the water now. Well, I know that Jennifer Love Hewitt has usually. Always?
Yeah, always.
See, it was it's a tough one because it was Jennifer in the early days, back in the I Know What You Did Last Summer type of stuff. But Christina Ricci, that is she's aged very well. Very, very well. Mm-hmm. Very well. All right, let's get into this. So we've got our draft and hold. We set this up on our Patreon. It wasn't a private league, but it was one that we immediately posted for everybody to check out. This is where we are. This is the exact one. I don't know if it's 100% ITL. It's a possibility. It's probably
I only
not.
Know one person that's in here from ITL, to be honest with you.
I think there's a few more. I would say at best probably 50%. So
I'm just not recognizing last names then, because it always does like, you know, team whatever as your last name.
Yeah.
So I'm just not recognizing last.
That's a good point. I'm looking at this. I don't recognize a whole bunch of this. So this is, I see Beck, I see Rayburn, I see Plansky. Those are, I think, all our guys. And there might be a couple more. So there's only a handful that are ours, and it opens up. And the draft and hold is a 12 team. It was just $50. Well, I'm thinking we might even do one more. So I know people might asking, we'll have some best balls going on, maybe do another draft and hold or whatever. But we got the second pick in the draft zone, which I thought was pretty lucky. I thought that was a pretty good spot for us to sit into. And we got the second pick in the 12. So here's how the first round laid out in ours. And it's going to be relatively chalky compared to what NFBC does, because we broke down a best ball, a points best ball last week, and that had some chaos. The number one pick was Ronald Acuna, who I believe is, I think he's number one in NFBC ADP, right?
Yeah.
Or is it Trey Turner?
No, it's Turner. It's Turner.
Yeah, it is Turner. Ronald Acuna went one. You and I with the second pick, we smashed jumping on Trey Turner. And we jumped right on that. Number three, Julio Rodriguez. Now, this was interesting. Number four was not Jose Ramirez. This happened before all the signings. Aaron Judge went number four. This is some good insight, but Jose Ramirez is a steal at number five. Kyle Tucker went six. Shohei Ohtani went seven. Bobby Witt Jr. went eight. Jordan Alvarez, 9. Soto fell to 10, which I was actually surprised about, only based off of a lot of like early projections and stuff. Mookie Betts went 11 and Vlad went 12. And I know those, I think that wheel situation is some of our guys. I know Luke was the 12th pick taking Vladimir Guerrero. So what you notice about that, no pitchers, not a single pitcher went in the first round, which I think is really kind of stand out.
But Ohtani loses value in a weekly league because you can only start him at pitcher or hitter. You know.
Yeah.
Now, you get a little bonus with that Friday switch. So, you know, if he starts early in the week.
But I don't think they allow you. I don't think they allow you to do that.
You can't do that?
No, if I remember correctly, you are weekly locked in positionally to what it is. Or, you know, he might just be an outfielder. If I'm thinking about, I think he's just an outfielder.
I think that's best ball. Best ball, you get one primary position. You don't get to switch. The way it is on Fantrax. I don't. All these different places have all these different rules.
Now I'm second guessing it. So I have to go look out. But the main point is no primary pitcher was taken in the first round,
right?
Which is not like usual years. Remember, this is Roto. This is a Roto category setup, and this is a common trend that's going on right now. because A, there's not definitive pitchers, a top guy. Even though Corbin Burns is going as a top guy, it's not elite. And the separation that Corbin Burns has between the other pitchers is not significant enough that people are willing to jump right on it. What was more fascinating, I'm not trying to jump to the second round quite yet, but only one other starting pitcher beside Corbin Burns went. We had two SPs and one relief pitcher. So through 24 picks, only three pitchers went in our setup, which this is, I want to point out again, this is not all ITL people listening to us or thinking about us. That's not this at all. This is a group of people that came in and paid their own money that are on NFBC looking to play. Three pitchers, two being starters in the top two rounds. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, it is.
By the way, we took one of those pitchers. We did.
We were one of them. We took Cole in the second round. I think this just shows that people just don't know about pitchers right now. You know, pitchers are so finicky. It's almost scary to take them high because so many of them get hurt that they're just not willing to take the risk. So people just aren't doing it.
Yeah. What was in the first round? What do you think? What was your least favorite pick? It's really hard to pull
in the
that
first but if round.
If you're talking about, and you get the benefit of looking at the second round as well, and that's fine if you want to pair them. But when you look at the first two rounds, like, what's the one pick that jumps out to you as like maybe not your favorite, if there is one?
I don't really think there is one. I'll say this: I don't like picking at six, like, because, like I said, those top five picks are all kind of obvious. If you're picking five, it's who fell to you. For Waxman here, who's picking five, Jose Ramirez fell to him. That's amazing.
Yeah.
At five. And then six, you go to Kyle Tucker, who is a great player, but I don't know. Is he worth the sixth pick? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. You know, he's in that mix.
It's a big
gap. Sure. Yeah. That's the spot that I don't like. I don't think it's bad taking Tucker. It's just, that is the spot that I don't like to be in because you miss out on one of those top five, unless someone throws a Bobby Witt or, you know, Vlad or someone crazy up there. And then, you know, you're picking six and you get one of those top five players, but didn't happen in this case. So that's really the spot. You can't hate on any of these picks in the first round, though. They're all good picks.
So in the second round, our boy Luke, he took Vlad with the top pick in his 12th pick in the first round. He then took Corbin Burns. So Corbin Burns was the 13th pick. Team 11, who took Mookie
Betts. I think that's the right move, even though the pitchers didn't go, because you're picking at the end. You got to wait till it comes all the way around. So even though, you know, none of us had the foresight to see that being one of two starters going in the first two rounds, I still think that's the right move.
And I don't think it mattered for you and I, because we were the second pick, but like the back half of the first round, they didn't have the foresight to know it. But yeah, I agree. I think Corbin Burns was a great pick there. Austin Riley got paired with Mookie Betts with the second pick in the second round. Then it went Bo Bichette was paired with Juan Soto, which I really like that combination. Machado was Machado was the fourth pick in that round, followed by Pete Alonso, Freddie Freeman, Fernando Tatis Jr. went paired with Kyle Tucker.
Surprising.
Yeah, it's high, but it's also, you know, this type of format, I guess you can play it. Rafael Devers was paired with Jose Ramirez. Edwin Diaz goes with team four to Aaron Judge and Edwin Diaz. That was the first closer, second overall pitcher taken. Mike Trout is paired with Julio Rodriguez. You and I paired Trey Turner with Garrett Cole, and Michael Harris was the final pick in the second round. So you have it's easy math, actually. It's only three teams that have any type of pitcher. Team one, team two, theoretically, I'm not going to count team five, actually. Team one and team two are the only ones to go outfielder of any of them. Team five and team eight were the only ones to go infield, with a slight caveat of Ohtani Freeman in there. And then, you know, you just had your mixtures across the board. That's kind of like how this ended up pairing out. But you and I getting Cole and Turner, I thought, really was a stage setter for the kind of core, because I had told you, I said, I want speed. I want speed early on. We can get it. I'd like to get a good elite pitcher early if we can. I didn't think Cole would be there, so it never really crossed my mind. I actually thought we would be more third round. I would be pressing you to take like DeGrom or something like that, or Shane McClanahan. and we were gifted with Gerrit Cole, which then, you know, put us in a situation where we could go hitting again because pitching is a little bit deeper. But the second round was definitely more of an eye opener in this format than anything.
And team five going third base to start is interesting with Jose and Devers, because you just get third and then corner and you're done with that.
I didn't even think about that. You're right. I mean, it's a garbage position. It's not a garbage position. I'm sorry. It's a very top heavy position.
Yeah.
And he took two off the board with his first two picks, which is a fascinating strategy.
I think just looking at this, by the way, I think after he took Devers, we've only had three other third basemen go. So
yeah, you and I haven't even taken a third baseman yet in this.
Arenado, Bregman, and Gunnar Henderson. There's some probably guys that have cross qualifications or whatever here that I'm not seeing, because I'm just looking at like the color scheme that an NFBC gives you on their draft board. But three other primary position third basemen went after. Well, I guess not after Devers. I guess it's four, because Arenado was the only extra one. Arenado, Bregman, Gunnar Henderson, and somebody else I'm missing here. Actually, maybe that is it. Yeah, that is it.
I mean, early on, like Bobby Witt, Manny Machado, like there's technically, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 third basemen that have come off the board.
And that's through 10 rounds.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, but it also just kind of falls off a cliff. Yeah. In the third round, team one went with their first pitcher, taking Sandy Alcantara. I would have even considered Gerrit Cole and Alcantara, if we're being honest. He went there, paired with his Michael Harrison Acuna. We went with Goldie. So we have Turner, Cole, and Goldie with our top three picks. Jazz Chisholm, Jose Altuve were the next two picks. Emmanuel Clase went to the all third base team. Closer. Jacob DeGrom goes to the Tucker Tatis, just all or nothing Ricky Bobby team. Lindor, Marcus Semien, Matt Olson, Woodruff, and Shane McClanahan, and Josh Hader ends out. So our boy Luke, who took Corbin Burns, took Hader, and then flipped around the next pick, also took Romano. So he double-tapped his closers, got a starter with Vlad. It's a phenomenal top four start, but he is the only team in the first three rounds to have two pitchers, and was one reliever, one starter.
What's the worst start through the top three rounds?
Okay, that's a good question. The worst start through this, here are the combos. Guerrero, Burns, Hader. Betts, Riley, McClanahan, Soto, Bichette, Woodruff, Alvarez, Machado, Olson, Witt, Alonzo, Semien, Otani, Freeman, Lindor, Tucker, Tatis, DeGrom, Ramirez, Devers, Clase, Judge, Edwin, Altuve, Julio, Trout, Jazz, Turner, Cole, Goldschmidt, Acuna, Harris, Alcantara.
They're all good, but one of them has to be worse, the worst. Is it team six, because you have Tatis and DeGrom, and that's very risky?
I would say that's the riskiest of all the teams, but the upside is like
it's crazy.
Bonkers. It's stupid. I could tell you, I don't know if I love team one. I'm not in love compared like Acuna, Harrison, I like Harris and stuff, but I don't know, man. Like, I just probably wouldn't have gone there. You know what would have been slick? If that dude would have went Alcantara and then Clase and would have taken, you know, one of the best pitchers, one of the best closers to go with Acuna, that would have been fun. I would probably pick on team one, maybe team six for their injury proneness. Okay. I don't love team nine. Team nine is all power. Machado did steal a few more bases, but it's Olson. I don't love Olson here. I like Alvarez.
No stolen bases, yeah.
Yeah, no stolen bases, no pitching whatsoever. So, you know what? I'm going to say team nine is probably had to pick one. Again, these are like really good.
They're all good. Yeah.
Yeah, but if I'm talking about team construction in the first three, obviously they have plenty of time to fix it. I don't love that one. Okay. What's yours?
I think that's fair. I think I'm going to stick with team six with the risky. That's what it is, but it's all... I mean, every team is good. So it's just hard to pick through here. And this is like, you know, I think we were a little confident to start, especially, I mean, through the next two rounds, too. We were pretty cocky. And looking at it now, it's like, well, every team's good. Of course,
Team's good. You know? Yeah. I mean, I will tell you, sitting at this moment, the one thing I'm regretting is not being more aggressive on closers. But like, we had a lot of stuff work our way, I think.
Yeah.
And I'm very happy with the hitting construction. I think the starters are good and you'll get to see it. So in round four, Luke, I told you paired Hader with Romano. I love this. Rayburn, this team is mine that Rayburn's got. He had Betts, Riley, McClanahan, and then he got Strider. I love that in the fourth. Romuto went in the fourth with the third pick, followed by Aaron Nola, Randy Arozarena, Liam Hendricks, Nolan Arenado, Dylan Cease, Justin Verlander, Devin Williams, and Bogman and I took Ozzie Albies. After, remember, Jazz and Altuve both went after our third round pick. We swooped back around and Semien. And then we got Ozzie Albies, the last tier of that second baseman. And then Ryan Pressly was the final pick here. So we've constructed an offense of Goldie, Albies, and Turner. There are stolen bases.
We were kind of between Albies and Pressly there, too. And then
Pressly was a little bit, I mean,
with the next pick.
We would. I told Boggs, like, I would have probably pressed for Devin Williams if he was there. Justin Verlander would have also been probably an option, but they both went. And this was, I thought it was kind of a no-brainer, just based, even though I'm not the biggest in the world on Ozzie Albies. Ozzie lost, obviously he had a bunch of injuries that took off his season, but he's like a 2020 potential guy.
Yeah.
But Dansby's offensive uptick also pushed him off for a period of time, hitting in that top of the order spot. And now that's going to be gone. Dansby's going to be gone. And this is a lockdown, get back at the top of the order situation with Acuna healthy. You do have a power bat in Matt Olson. So, I mean, I'm game with Ozzie Albies. I thought we, again, just got, we're going to love our own team and stuff, I guess, of course. But I just thought this was a good deal, especially when you look at this round. Things are starting to open up. We had our first catcher. Randy Arozarena went in there. We had quite a few closers. If you want to talk about deals in round four, I think the deals in my mind are Strider, Nola, Cease, and Ozzie Albies. I think those are the best deals that were put together in this round.
I think it's hard to disagree with that.
Round five, then we'll kind of come back at the end and we'll take a look at like actually what teams we didn't like. It went Wheeler. So now team one has Alcantara with Wheeler, Pressly, and then Harris and Acuna. Again, I don't love it, but it's not horrible. You and I went with Max Scherzer. So now we paired Scherzer with Cole. So we've got two pitchers, shortstop, second, and first. Adley was the next pick, followed by Rodon, Varsho. We had a long conversation about the catchers, too, by the way, and we were thinking about Varsho, and we missed out. Cedric Mullins, Julio Urias, Kyle Schwarber, Camilo Duvall went, Zach Gallen, Will Smith, the catcher, and Luis Robert. So this round definitely started to open your eyes of what the hell this is going to go. You had more catchers go. The relievers are really getting ugly at this point. I mean, Camilo Duvall's going in the fifth round. That's the kind of space that we're in.
Duvall was pretty good last year.
I mean, he was good, but that's the space.
He's dicey. Yeah, he's definitely dicey. He's not comfortable. I'll say that. He's good, but he is definitely not comfortable.
What was your nervous? What was your favorite and least favorite pick of round five?
I think Duvall was a stretch. I think you're right about that. You know, like Duvall was good last year, and if closers are going, you need to take him. But I had a Helsley ahead of Batista. I had ahead of some decent guys, at least in that mix. I think I would have rather had Gallen or Luis Robert or someone. So I think that's probably my least favorite. My favorite pick here, man, this is such a good round. I think Cedric Mullins is a deal. I do. And I just think he's a deal. You know, we got Platoon last year. I think that's going to be fixed. Julio Urias came at a great deal too. So did Zach Gallen. I think I like the starters here. I think I'm going to say, excuse me, Gallen near the end. I think that's probably my favorite pick of this round.
So I want to give you one little tidbit. Through five rounds, there is one team that has not drafted a single pitcher, and that is team eight, who took Bobby Witt, Pete Alonso, Marcus Semien, and then two outfielders in Arozarena and Kyle Schwarber. Not one starting pitcher. There's one other team that has one pitcher, and they do not have a starter. And I'm sorry, so technically teammate has no pitcher whatsoever. Team three also does not have a starting pitcher. They just drafted a reliever in Devin Williams. So those two teams made a commitment to just not go heavy into pitching. Now things will change here shortly. And the highest pitching team through five rounds is a tie between team one that has Alcantara, Wheeler, Pressly, team four that has Rodon, Verlander, Edwin. So those are both two pitcher and a closer. And then you have Luke's team, which is two closers and one starter. So that's kind of the breakdown through five rounds here. All right. round six, which, let's see, which way does this go here? Round six goes at the end here. Luis Robert. Yeah, Luke goes Wander Franco. Then we have Adolis Garcia, Ryan Helsley, Shane Bieber, Alec Manoah. That was teammate's first pitcher, Alec Manoah. Kevin Gausman, Felix Bautista, Trevor Story, Tommy Edmond. Tommy Edmond was a great pick. Corey Seager, a really great pick. I love that. I would have loved to actually have gotten him. But it went right before us. We took our first closer in Raisel Iglesias, and then Luis Castillo ended the round. So, you know, we definitely waited. We had been contemplating closers. This is a situation that was a absolute no-brainer to both of us, and we did it before the Kenley Jansen signing, which made it all but better. Atlanta's going to win a lot of games. Raisel is in the situation. Hopefully doesn't blow it, but this is one of those. This is a lockdown for both of us, and that's why, like, they let Kenley go.
Yeah. Yeah, and Iglesias is going to be great in that role. A great spot to be in. Braves going to win a ton of games. I think it's an excellent pick. You know, I know it's our pick, but I do think it was very, very solid. So
your least and most favorite
Trevor Story, easily my least favorite here. I just don't know. You know, we'll see about Trevor Story. And then my favorite pick, I think Wander on the buyback from Luke is a great pick. I think that's a very solid one. And then the rest is just like getting pitchers. I think teammate was desperate for one, so getting Manoah was good. I think Bieber to team nine was a solid pick. And Luis Castillo at the end, but team one already had some starters. So I don't know. I don't know if you needed Luis Castillo. I do think he's a good pick.
But I think Luis Castillo made it the first team to have three starting pitchers as team one. So he went Castillo, Wheeler, and Alcantara, which is pretty good. My favorite was Corey Seager. I really think Corey Seager is going to have a big, big bounce back. The hard hit numbers are there. One of the lower BABIPs in the entire league. And I think you're going to see improvement on that across the board. I also thought Tommy Edman. I just thought those were just really good, solid ones. I can tell you, I personally, this is one thing I hate about this state of especially the NFBC drafts. I just hate the closures that go in here. I hate having to take Ryan Helsley in the sixth round. I hate having to take Felix Bautista in the sixth round. Those are just like personal dislikes overall. But it is what you have to do.
At least Helsley's on a good team.
Yeah. In the seventh round, this was actually a guy I was making an argument to Bog that maybe we take him here, even though we had Trey Turner, but we really needed the closer, and it made our decision because we had three players on our board, and we had Iglesias, we had Eloy Jimenez, and we had O'Neill Cruz. And the problem was we had zero outfielders, and we had a shortstop. I was trying to make the case for O'Neill, but it really just wasn't 100% making sense. And O'Neill went with the first pick. So that's why we didn't take him in the six. Had we taken Iglesias and team one taken Eloy, then I think you would have relented and just been like, yeah, we'll just take him, whatever, because he's the best player. But yeah, he made a decision for us by taking O'Neill. So we then took Eloy Jimenez with the second pick in the seventh round, which I think is quite a bit lower than what his average is going. This was one of the big deals we got. I mean, I know Curlin made this big thing about he's, you know, setting the min picks on him and stuff like that. I mean, in the second pick in the seventh round, what the hell? That's equivalent to, it's like in the 70s. So, I mean, that's a really good spot for him.
Yeah, I thought we 50. I'll actually look right now because I have it pulled up. I can tell you exactly what his current ADP is. Right now it is, it's dropped. It's actually 80.
What's his min though?
46.
Yeah. I mean, you got to remember, I think that's changed. If we were to sort this from, like, you know, November on, I think it would move a little bit, but I love the spot that we got him in. So it went O'Neill Cruz, Eloy, Byron Buxton, Salvador Perez, Teoscar Hernandez, Max Fried, Corbin Carroll showed up, the seventh pick in the seventh round, Dansby Swanson, Alejandro Kirk, Andres Jimenez, Vinny Pasquantino, and Gunnar Henderson. So this is the big youth reach range. Pasquantino jumping over, went ahead of Jose Abreu by two rounds, by the way. And you had obviously Corbin Carroll and Gunnar going in the same round overall. So what was your favorite and least favorite picks in this round?
Real quick, I just want to look at this Eloy from, look, he actually moved down if we just go to December, which is strange.
Interesting.
And you're asking me what my favorite least, pick was?
Yeah, favorite and least favorite.
I mean, just taking any catcher. So Alejandro Kirk going in here, you know, I like Kirk. He is my son, but
it's a two catcher. It's a two. I mean, I was making the argument to look at the, we were talking about Varsho early. Okay. I mean, I can guess.
I don't care. Like, you know, there's just so many other players, like the guys that he took after Kirk, I would, Tim Anderson and Harper were his next two picks. I would take both those guys over Kirk, but you know, I guess that's just me and my hate for catchers, which is something we have here at ITL. Favorite pick,
it just doesn't work in a two catcher league. That's the problem. Like I agree with you here. It doesn't fly as much in a two catcher.
I just still think it's too early, even a two catcher, but that's just me. Teoscar. I like Teoscar. I thought that was an excellent pick here. So it'd be Kirk or, you know, just when are we going to be done on the buyback with Buxton is my question, because you got win again here. I mean, and you're not even doing it. Yeah, but you made no argument for Byron Buxton here, which surprised me a little bit, but also it surprised me to see him go that high. I thought, oh, we're going to have to deal with the Buxton argument.
What's his ADP on? I don't think it's that high. What's his ADP on here?
Let me look. I got to go back now because I switched all the screwy dates here. Buxton's ADP is, if this thing will ever
I'm curious because I see where I have him in my normal ranks.
104.
Okay, I'm at 85 in my normal ranks, but I got Eloy in the high 50s. Yeah, I said Eloy higher. So
161 is his max, which is crazy to me.
See, one of the things that happened with our roster too is we'd already had Turner and Albies, and you get a little bit with Goldie that I didn't feel the need, like, well, Bucks doesn't steal anymore, so it doesn't matter. But I wanted like the batting average and the you know, the theoretical season of health with Eloy Jimenez. I just had him higher. You know, if I'm looking at this, I just love the O'Neill Cruz pick. This is such a good space for
him. Who are you?
Well, but I said this last year to everybody. I was like, I don't want that year. I'll take the next year. And he showed really great signs of improvement. It's just the potential. And this is a league where you play into the potential. Though I will say that you and I are constructing a very chalk team and not taking big swing risks, which might work out for us. And I'm thinking it's going to work out for us.
You take the big swings later. Julio went so late last year at this point. And he won people leagues. He won me a league last year. So, or not won, but got me in the money in a league last year. So, you know, I think it's better to take, because when you take those swings early, you're passing up established great players to take the swing, which I do not like. You know, you do have to take risk in every fantasy sport at some point, higher in baseball because there's so much volatility. But I still think it's a tad early to be taking those big massive hacks.
Yeah. I mean, I would have taken them though. Like, I think if this were my team, I would have been willing to take them. The problem is I just thought we've just done a really good job and we've just had really great value that's popped up across the board. Like, I don't know if it were just my team here, the amount of things I would have done different. I probably would have done a couple things. I probably would have taken O'Neill Cruz and pressed on that. But I will take, I don't think it's too bad to take swings, but we've been putting together just this great thing where I think there's been value across the board, especially based on my own rank. So I like the O'Neill Cruz pick. What I didn't like, Andres Jimenez, like Andres Jimenez went after Bregman. And I'm looking at his team. I guess he didn't have a lot of stolen bases. This is team 10 Beck. He only had Bo Bichette. So maybe that was kind of the reach. I don't particularly love that one, especially with like Gunnar Henderson on the board. So that's me. Luke in the eighth round went Christian Javier. We then have NJ Melendez, Alex Bregman, Tim Anderson, Jeremy Pena, Joe Musgrove, Yu Darvish, Kenley Jansen, Tyler Glasnow, Tristan McKenzie. We took Starling Marte and then went Brian Reynolds. Fun fact, team three, that is the first starting pitcher taken in the eighth round. Tristan McKenzie, the first starting pitcher. One other team, team eight, also only has one starting pitcher through eight rounds with Alek Manoah, which they took in the sixth round. That is wild. And team 11 has only two total pitchers. It is McClanahan and Strider, and they went really heavy hitting. So that's kind of how the pitching breakdown works through eight rounds for the odd number of teams. You and I, though, through eight rounds only have three. It's two starters and one closer, which I don't think is anything bad. But the two pitchers kind of stand out through eight rounds.
Yeah, I mean, that is that's surprising. Then spoiler alert, that is the only pitcher, that's the only starter that team three still has through 10 rounds here, which is kind of crazy.
Favorite, least favorite. I'm going to guess your favorite is Yu Darvish and your least favorite is MJ Melendez.
No, I mean, I don't like Melendez is fine. I whatever, you know, we're kind of getting to that point. But he already had that. See, at least that's the double tap, you know, where he took Will Smith. So take another catcher and make it, you know, make it a strength of your team. I understand that pick more than the Kirk pick for 14-9, you know, which is whatever, you know, I don't like taking catchers that close, that high, even in two catcher leagues, but it makes sense. I think Tim Anderson was a great deal here. I think that's probably my favorite pick for team nine. And then my least favorite, they're all decent. I don't know. I think my least favorite pick, maybe I don't really have one. I got to be honest, dude. I like McKenzie. I think that's, I hate McKenzie as an ace, but I like McKenzie as a pitcher. So I guess I would pick that one because you're taking him as your ace, but it's not really about the player. It's about the position you're putting yourself in.
Yeah, so. I didn't love like Brian Reynolds. Like Brian Reynolds is fine. You do technically have two Braves and two Pirates as your entire offense.
You got to really, they got to trade him for him to hold that value right there. I think you're right about that.
I probably would have like gone a little bit more upside, like at Springer or let Bogarts out there. I don't know, just something different. But that's probably my least. I think there's a lot of great picks in here. I love what we did with the stolen bases with Marte. So we've added that with, you know, we've been trying to stack some power in Eloy and Goldschmidt. And then, you know, you're able to get some more stolen bases. I love the Tyler Glasnow one. I thought that was sneaky. Yu Darvish actually seemed like a huge, huge value here. Might be my favorite of all of them. And the Bregman Anderson was like just really great spots. Round nine, team one went with Rhys Hoskins. We took Framber Valdez. So we now have Cole Scherzer, Valdez as our top three. Nate Lowe, George Springer, Xander Bogaerts to team five. Wilson Contreras, Tyler O'Neill, Jose Abreu, Bryce Harper finally went. Clay Holmes, Willy Adames, and Seiya Suzuki ended out the ninth round. And then we'll just go through the 10th. Tyler Stevenson was the final of the top 10 picks for Luke at 12. Logan Gilbert, Robbie Ray, Scott Barlow, George Kirby, Sean Murphy, Gleyber Torres, Hunter Green, Blake Snell, Jake McCarthy. We took our first catcher in Willem Contreras, and Johan Duran was the final pick through the 10 rounds. So least favorite, most favorite of rounds 9 and 10. You can just pick one between the two rounds of your least and your most.
I didn't like the McCarthy pick so much for team three. And I like Jake McCarthy a lot. He's a Diamondback. I like him, but like pretty crowded outfield in Arizona. So
I will tell you, I've heard some trade rumors that are centered around a very specific trade rumor I've been told around Jake McCarthy.
All right. Well, I mean,
play off air.
If he lands in a good spot outside of Arizona, okay. But right now in Arizona, you know, it's just crowded. It you know, you're bumping up against stuff. And McCarthy is good, but he's not established enough to where a bad first 2 months would keep him in the lineup. They wouldn't. So that's a little risky to me. And I know a lot of stolen base upside,
yeah,
very high speed guy. But this guy already has Julio, Jazz.
Seager's
going to steal some. Like, he's got enough steals. So to reach on McCarthy, when you need starters, you have to have them. McKenzie's your only starter, I think, was easily the worst pick out of these two rounds.
And it was his fourth outfielder. That's the thing that stands out to me. It was his fourth outfielder of all the things in it. Like, yes, he had stolen bases. You could always argue you can go for more and stuff like that. But you had four outfielders through those rounds with only one starting pitcher. It's just the construction doesn't reap ours. I kind of agree with you. What was your favorite?
My favorite, it's kind of hard to pick because I think we're doing, this is a lot of like, you know, maintenance picks in these two rounds. It's getting a stat that you don't have, a position you don't have, something like that. So I don't know that I'm particularly in love with any of these picks. I like the risk on Bryce Harper in the ninth round here. I know he's going to miss a big chunk of the year, but I don't know. Stranger things have happened than Bryce Harper making an early return. He returned early last year after breaking his thumb. So I like that risk.
I like the Jose Abreu pick a lot. I think that's just like a really good value in the ninth round, you know, going two rounds after Vinny Pascantino, I think just seems odd. I like the Xander Bogaerts in hindsight, of course. You know, I'll be honest, I didn't like our pick because you and I had a miscommunication. I thought this was Wilson Contreras and it was Willem Contreras. And not that I didn't like
I think Contreras. It's okay still because the pitching got so bad after that.
I don't disagree with you, but I would pick mine as one of the ones I don't like because of our miscommunication. Because I thought like, oh my God, we're getting Wilson Contreras. I don't know. I mean, a lot of them did go, like MJ Melendez has already gone and stuff like right. that. So I think hindsight would probably still, it still works out, but that kind of stands out to me. Johan Duran is another one. Like, he's not guaranteed a job. That's what the number one team did. I guess I really just didn't like, even though I love some of the core of team one, I just didn't like what they did. Johan Duran is not guaranteed that gig as far as I know right now. So it just seemed, I don't know, it just seemed a little bit too early for that. Like, I just don't know why I would spend a top 10 pick on a theoretical closer when there's a lot of other good position and a lot of things he needed. I mean, he had five total position players, three of them in the outfield. You know, you have two infielders, one O'Neill Cruz and one Reese Hoskins. I probably would have rather gone in a different direction. But, you know, it's interesting constructions. And as we said, there were two teams that only invested in two pitchers. And so teams we talked about, which is crazy. I believe team 10, I'm trying to do the count here. Live, I believe team 10, team 4, and team 1 were split. They did five total pitchers on their first 10 picks. So if you want to kind of know the mix, Bogdan and I, so our first top 10 picks were Trey Turner, Garrett Cole, Paul Goldschmidt, Ozzie Albies, Max Scherzer, Raisel Iglesias, Eloy, Starling Marte, Framber, and Willem Contreras. I just really like it, man. It doesn't have the sexiness of the Gunner and the Carrolls or the O'Neill Cruz or Michael Harris. It doesn't have those young guys. It's older. It's kind of boring, but we've got power. We took Giancarlo Stanton a little bit later. We've got power. We've got batting average. We have stolen bases. I think our pitching is really good. We are suffering at closer, which we're going to have to make up for, and we need a second catcher. But that was, you know, we had a very similar approach, very few like actual disagreements. We both just kind of worked on it. And this is you and I splitting a team because I can't play NFBC, which is the dumbest thing on the planet.
I don't understand it at all. Like, you know, Arizona is baseball central too. Like, you have the fall league, spring training, a major league baseball team. Like, there's so much baseball going on in Arizona that how is an FBC not involved? I don't understand it at all.
Yeah, man, they just got to get their license. They got to get the licensing done.
Pay for it.
And they need to do it. Yeah, get it done. Get it done real quick. Watch yourself. Watch it. Watch it, Bogdan. Bogdan caught himself. He's about to say some things. Say some bleeps and some creeps and some sweeps. If you guys want, you can obviously come and check us out at inthisleague.com. You can sign up and we will probably run, I think, at least one more. I think it's relatively safe to say, but you guys can also start them up. We have people that will jump in the different NFBCs and share it and say, hey, I'm in here if anyone wants to play. And that's kind of a cool thing. The same thing happens with normal leagues. Literally today, someone posted they had an opening in a keeper league. They were sharing some of the roster. People are interested. It's a great community that we built at the LT level or above. And you also have access to us. You've got updated ranks that are dropping and it should be already out there. We're going to be doing tons more stuff in the season and mock drafts are coming. Might even be next week. I don't know. Bogdan and I haven't really talked about it, but we always, maybe not. Maybe Bogdan just gave me a look. Maybe it's not going to be next week, but we do mock drafts with our listeners for full prep and we do all different types of formats. So be on the lookout for that. Actually, I think we talked about dynasty stuff is what's going to be happening. I think it's going to be dynasty ranks and then a dynasty mock will be 2 weeks from now. So be on the lookout for all of that as we're going to go into some dynasty offseason stuff in the next episodes. But hey, if you guys had an opinion on the NFBC roster, if you liked ours, hit us with a tweet. Is it the Welsh Bogdan Sports? Let us know. If there's another team that you really like, let us know as well. I'd love to know what you guys think of how we're doing and where we're going on these bad boys. And that is it, Boggs. We've done a best ball. We've done a little draft and hold. Now we're going to get into some dynasty. We're going to cover the whole gambit, baby. You're muted. You're 100% muted.
I was coughing right into the microphone, so I had to mute myself. So, yeah, I mean, it's baseball season. We're up. We're ready to go. And I'm excited about it, man.
Yep.
Let's get those dynasty episodes next week. I'm excited. Let's go.
You guys can catch me over on CBS once a week. If you guys are looking, I think I'm always on the Thursday episode with Scott White and Frank Stanfill. I've also written in the Fantasy Black Book that Joe is going to, I don't know his date. He's shooting around mid-December, maybe late December. But the Fantasy Black Book will be out. I did strategies and did profiles. So I did a lot more than I ever do. So you can get my ramblings in there. I get rambly sometimes, especially when going through stats. So you'll see my rambliness in there, but you'll tell that it's me. So those are some other baseball outlets that you can check me out on. And of course, inthisleague.com, if you guys want to support, if you want to fight the good fight with us and support, come and check us out. Anything helps, of course. $5 gets you the ranks, $10 gets you that and all the group me rooms and more. And maybe you even just want to be a captain in the ITL Army, be the greatest. Lastly, 1 week from today, we've got Deck Our Balls Christmas special. If you're listening to this timely enough, so make sure that you guys are ready for that. I know I'm not, and I'm going to have to get prepared. The Welsh wheel is going to be brutal to me, and Bogman's got to get all healthy so he can, cry or throw up or disappear, whatever it is. Like you do different things. You go to Mars. 1 year you went to Mars. 1 year you cried. 1 year you ended up in a shower. Like it's always, I think the cry and shower ended the same thing. I think it was.
I think that was the same one.
That was the blackout year. That was the blackout year. And then
team blackout. Yeah, that's what
team blackout. Exactly. That's exactly right. I think I ended up in the shower last year, but it wasn't for what you thought. It was because of pickles and macadamia nut cookies. So like a brick in my goddamn stomach. So we'll have fun with it. But that is the episode, friends. Thank you so much. Give us a rate and review on Spotify or iTunes if you would. And we'll be back again with you next week as we're talking Dynasty. Right here on the In This League Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We out. Peace.
Cool.